Renata Adler had the career that writers just dream of. At age 24, a young star at The New Yorker. Then, at 29, a film critic for The New York Times, the first woman to hold that job. For The New Yorker, she reported on the civil rights movement, the war in Biafra, Watergate. She wrote important essays. She posed for Richard Avedon. She went to the right parties and knew all the important people. In 1976, still in her 30s, she published her first novel, Speedboat, to great acclaim, and her second, Pitch Dark, 5 years later. And then things changed. In the 80s, she was purged from the fancy circles where she'd been the it girl. Her books went out of print. And for the last 30 years, she has not published any fiction at all. But she's always had fans, including me. Both of Renata Adler's novels have recently been republished, putting her back in the literary spotlight. And she joins me now. Renata Adler, welcome to Studio 360.
Well, thanks.
So you published these two novels 30 and 37 years ago. And they were out of print, I guess?
Oh, yes, they were.
I assume you had not reread these novels?
I had not reread these novels, no. And in fact, don't usually reread things after they've been in print because there's nothing you can do about it anymore. But this time I thought, well, all right, I mean, it's just not grown up not to read them. I will now read them.
Did you think, yeah, this isn't bad?
Sometimes I thought this isn't bad. Sometimes I thought this is incredibly embarrassing. It's so bad. And then sometimes
it's like writing a book.
It's like writing a book. And then to my surprise, I thought, oh, you know, to the degree I thought about it at all, I thought I was amazed to think those were 30 years and whatever, 100 years, how many it's been.
About 100.
About 100 years since Speedboat, maybe 75 years since
yeah.
Pitch Dark.
And so it didn't strike you as a period piece in any way or as, oh, I was so young and thought differently about the world then.
No, it didn't, which was sort of a surprise. And then Pitch Dark, which in a way had meant much more to me and in a way still does, they didn't seem, oh, was I ever like that?
Yeah. Both Speedboat and Pitch Dark are more collage-like than they are of scenes and perceptions than conventional plotty novels. But you've said many times you've always been a great reader of, lover of old-fashioned plotty novels. So do you feel as though the literary fashions of that moment sort of guided your hand to write them that way rather than what you really wanted to write?
No, I don't think it was that. I had no intention of doing anything with the fragmentary quality at all and wasn't even aware in that sense that it was because I knew not anything could go anywhere. So I'd think, well, there's too much of this and now we need some of this, right? So I was thinking,
it wasn't random, in other words.
It wasn't random, but it also didn't, in my head, lack plot. But then Pitch Dark does have a plot. It even has a
much
a
more
chase.
So. Yes.
It even has a chase.
No, it's a more normal piece of fiction.
Well, yeah, but also the middle section actually was written as, I guess, what I've never thought of till this minute, as a chase. I mean, it was suspenseful. It was suspenseful for me for a while, and then when I saw what it was too out of context. I mean, I just had to put in this other stuff. So I'm surprised that why not just leave it a sequence, sequence?
But that gets back to my question about literary fashion. Did you feel, oh, I have to art this up a bit?
No, not art. Not art.
No?
No, I did think, well, you know, I may be wrecking this. I just need to do this. I think this is a very odd thought. I didn't want anything to be too obviously what it is.
Well, I'd love to have you read a bit of that chase from the central section of Pitch Dark. It's the scene where the book's narrator, a newspaper reporter called Kate Ennis, is in Ireland. She's trying to put some distance between herself and her married lover. And then she has this minor accident in her rental car, which makes her feel like a fugitive on the lam.
Okay. Beside the road, invisible, the fields, the long stone walls. On the road, few cars, three perhaps an hour. All of them coming towards me, nobody following them, no one in pursuit. And yet, as I passed through small, dark, widely separated towns, I wondered whether my headlights and engine were noticed, whether a policeman, perhaps, or some sleepy but eager informer had picked up the receiver and called the next town. Phones ringing then from town to town, not even for me necessarily. What lawful errand, after all, could send a cheap, small, rented car out on a southern Irish road at this speed, in this weather, at this hour? Except that, with any luck, it no longer gave it much sign of being a rented car. That afternoon, in broad daylight, I had peeled its rental sticker off. In fact, though I did not know at what precise moment I had crossed over into crime, that removal must have marked a turning point. On the one hand, they could say that it proved guilt, or at least criminal intent. I, on the other hand, I could make what I had begun to think of as the argument of, what kind of fool do you take me for? I mean, do you take me for such a fool as to remove a rental sticker in broad daylight when what I have in mind is a furtive escape? The argument I knew hardly ever worked, in politics or criminal law or private life. And yet, in my case, there was no criminal record and so little evidence. It made no sense for me to be doing what I seemed to be doing, in view of what little I had done. I might prevail. Sleet came down. It was pitch dark.
That is Renata Adler reading from her novel Pitch Dark. And as you say, that passage is in no way some highfalutin experimental fiction
thing. No. It's just running like hell and then hitching a ride and so on.
You said earlier that you are more fond of this book than you are of Speedboat. How come? You were just doing it better the second time?
Well, no. I guess I had thought both abstractly and in real life that there is this tension between modernism, however you define it, and feeling, and that there are very few of the effects, the most valuable effects of feeling that you can get if you're a modernist. And it's partly out of dread of kitsch, which is the thing of saying, oh, this is so obvious, I know exactly what it is. And it's partly like the loss of melody in music. But music will get you. I mean, if music will, you'll get whatever feeling the music asks you to get, probably.
But the same thing happened in mid-20th century.
The same thing happened in the mid-20th century. And most of the, I mean, I don't know that many modernists, but people that I knew that were in any sense modernist.
As
fiction writers or as photographers. Sort of despised feeling. I mean, they thought that those are cheaply won. It's sentimentality. And I remember saying to Richard Avedon, who was a friend, I said, you know, I have sort of this housemaid side. That is, I cry at the movies and I like there to be a plot and I like to care about who gets what and it matters to me. And I even watch soap operas, you know. And he said, I hate that. And he said it nicely, but he meant it. He didn't want it in his work. He just didn't want that. And I did want it in mine.
You had been the film critic for the New York Times before you started publishing fiction, a film critic for the New Yorker. Had you, like so many journalists and critics and nonfiction writers, always wanted to write a novel? Was that the brass ring, or a brass ring?
No. What happened was that I didn't expect to be a writer at all because I had this difficulty writing and it's so embarrassing, you know, to be published and do. And then it turns out when I became the film critic for the New York Times, the way out of that embarrassment is not to stop writing and being published. The only way out of whatever you did wrong and that you regret in your last piece is to do the next one, which is already due anyway. So the way to erase is go forward. But no.
That sounds like how criminals become criminals too, probably.
Well, I think they're probably akin. But I just thought if you're going to be a critic, it isn't really fair not to have tried the thing you're writing about.
I couldn't agree with you more. There are certain things that one can be a critic of and you can't expect a film critic to have directed a film.
No, but, or a ballet critic to have danced.
But writing books.
Yeah. Because there's something awful about this critic who sits there, who Lord knows for most of my working life I was, who sits there. And there you are. You've got 5 hours if you're at a newspaper. And that's it. You know, and if you might have liked it on another day or
yes.
You may or not liked it. Yes. It just seemed
and
not.
These 3 years that you spent doing that, eh.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Because if you knew if you took the full weight of that, it just isn't right.
Yeah. And you've also written a third novel?
Yeah, but where is it? You know, why don't I?
I was going to ask you that very question.
Yes, why haven't I turned it in? And I just got to turn it in. I guess.
Well, why did you take 30 years to write another one?
I have a lot of trouble writing. That's basically what it is. It's just hard for me.
Yeah.
Not always. Every once in a while there's something I think, this – but it lasts a page or two.
Mm-hmm. But you're still – you feel sort of back in the saddle and you want to keep writing?
I never feel back in the saddle, but I'd like to keep writing, sure. Sure, I'd like to keep writing. Yeah, and then, of course, the thing we all want is not to die miserably. preferably. I mean, in the rest.
Well, may you not die miserably or soon.
Well, thank you, as a friend of mine says, and you the same.
Renata Adler, thank you very much. Renata Adler's novels Speedboat and Pitch Dark are now out in new editions.